Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to Five Star Business Finance Limited Q1 FY25 earnings conference call hosted by JM Financial. As a reminder, all participants' lines will be in the listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star, then zero on your touch-tone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Sameer Bhise. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the Five Star Business Finance Limited's 1Q FY25 earnings conference call. First of all, I would like to thank the management of Five Star Business Finance for giving us the opportunity to host this call. From the management side, we have Mr. Lakshmipathy Deenadayalan, Chairman and Managing Director, Mr. Rangarajan Krishnan, Chief Executive Officer, and Mr. Srikanth Gopalakrishnan, Chief Financial Officer of the company. As always, we will have opening comments from the management, post which we will open the floor for Q&A. With that, I would now like to hand over to Mr. Lakshmipathy Deenadayalan for his opening comments. Over to you, sir.
Yeah. Thank you, Sameer. Good morning. I welcome everyone for this Q1 earnings call for the financial year 2024-25. This is our eighth earnings call. You have seen us in the last eight quarters of performance, what we say and what we do, and what we have delivered in the last two full cycles. Before getting into the numbers of June quarter, let me give you some highlights. Generally, June quarter is a muted quarter for all lenders. For Five Star, we have done extremely well and did highest-ever numbers in this quarter. To highlight a few, I'm happy to say that our assets under management has crossed 10,000 crores in June quarter. Very emotional, being the Chairman and Managing Director of Five Star. When I joined 20 years back, we were at 10 crores. Today, when I look back and see the growth, what we have done in the last two decades, we have reached at 10,000 crores, which is 1,000 times in the last 20 years. Thank you for all the support that shareholders have been offering to giving to me and my management team to run it in a steady and a stable way. Second highlight is our profitability, which has crossed 252 crores in June quarter, which is our ever-highest quarter of PAT recorded in the history of Five Star. Third highlight, our ROE, which is the return on equity, which is a very important metric for a shareholder, is at an all-time high of 18.95% in a quarter, and we will comfortably cross 19% for the full year. So with these positive highlights, what we have done in June quarter, let me get into the numbers. Starting from branches, we have opened 27 branches in June quarter, which keeps our total branch strength at 547 branches. Disbursement, which saw 1,318 crores in June quarter, comparing to 1,336 crores in March quarter, which is almost flat, which is a good sign when a lender was able to deliver the disbursement equal to the best quarter of March. That gives a very good kickoff for this full financial year. When we compare with June of last year, we did a disbursement of 1,132 crores, which is 16% higher than year-on-year. That has reflected in increase in our AUM. As I said, we have crossed 10,000 crores. We are at 10,344 crores as of June end. versus 7,583 crore in last June, registering a 36% year-on-year growth. And from March, 9,641 crores, registering a 7% growth on Q-on-Q. Now, taking you to the collections, which is the most important part. Our collection efficiency in June was bit lower comparing with March. That's a usual effect of June quarter. Adding to that was the election heat and heat wave across entire country that had an impact on the collection efficiency. Nevertheless, it was only a small blip. We were at 99.5% in March. We are at 98.5% in June. The unique customer collection efficiency, which we normally call collecting a due from all live customer, was almost equal with March. It was at 97.8% in March versus 97.2% in June. So that shows the slowdown is very, very small. This has reflected in gross Stage 3 assets, moving from 1.38% in March to 1.41% in June, a small blip increase of 3 basis points. Whereas it was stable comparing with last June, it was 1.41 versus 1.41 in this June too. Now, moving towards the cost of funds, our cost of funds on book was 9.6% in June quarter, which was same in March quarter as well. But the good news is the incremental cost of borrowing is coming down from 9.58% in March to 9.47% in June. So this shows the interest from lender's perspective and the risk premium what Five Star was added to Five Star is coming down. The increase in AUM and good collections has resulted in one of the good profitability for Five Star. Our total income has gone up to 669 crores in June quarter comparing to 483 crores last June year-on-year, registering a 38% year-on-year growth. And from March, it moved up to 619 crores to 669 crores, which is a growth of 8%. Translating into good profit, as I said earlier, highest ever profit that we have made in a single quarter. We have done 252 crores of PAT comparing to 236 crores in March and 134 crores in June last year, registering a 37% year-on-year growth and 7% Q-on-Q growth. And finally, moving towards the returns, the return on assets is stable at above 8% comparing to March. And as I said, the return on equity is an all-time high at 18.95% comparing to 18.65% in March quarter. And as I commented earlier, we'll be comfortably crossing 19% plus for the full year in this financial year. So with these numbers, I will hand over to Srikanth, our CFO, to detailed commentaries on all the numbers.
Good morning to all of you. As Mr. Pathy said, this is a very, very memorable quarter for us. We crossed the 10,000 crore mark in our AUM. So this is a progress that has been built over the last many years, and it's a moment of real joy for all of us. I'll touch upon some aspects which Mr. Pathy has not covered. I don't want to repeat whatever he has already stated. Our active loans has gone up from about, it has gone up to about 4.1 lakhs, which is a 29% growth on a year-on-year basis. This clearly shows that the growth is still led by increase in borrower base rather than increase in ticket size. The ticket size remains almost flat at about 3.5 lakhs. Our yields continue to remain consistent at around the 24 quarters percentage. The cost of funds is at 9.65%. So the spreads are flat as compared to the previous quarter and similar to June 23 as well. There is a compression in NIMs on account of increased debt and increased leverage. The NIMs dropped to 16.72% as against 17.74% in the quarter one of last financial year. Our cost to income continues to be very attractive. Inclusive of credit cost, this number was at about 34.34% for this quarter as compared to 36.6% for the June quarter of last year. Again, as we have guided in the past, we expect our cost to income to be around 35-36% levels in a steady state scenario. So there is not a very great room available for, you know, continuous reductions in the quarters to come. This has resulted in an ROA of about 8.23% for the quarter and a return on equity of 18.95%, very close to 19%. From a borrowing perspective, we have about 42 lenders who have lent to us. One other encouraging fact, in line with our stated strategy, we have started the process of diversification of our borrowings. Our borrowings from banks, the proportion of borrowing from banks reduced from 79% in March to about 74% as of now. If you compare on a year-on-year basis, it has dropped from 84% to 74%. During this quarter, we received incremental sanctions of about 850 crores. We availed 825 crores at an all-inclusive cost of 9.47%. The company continues to be conservative in terms of maintaining good liquidity buffers and unavailed sanction lines. So we had a liquidity buffer of about close to 1,900 crores, 1,891 crores, and unavailed sanction line of about 400 crores. We will also see more non-bank capital market transactions and DFIs getting added in this quarter and the quarters to come. We have seen a marginal dip in the collection efficiency. Mr. Pathy has already talked about that. But for those marginal increases, which has also impacted the current and the delinquency buckets a little bit, from a provision coverage perspective, we are still very healthy and robust. We have a stage 3 provision coverage of 52% and an overall provision coverage of 1.63%. So we will continue to remain optimistic as well as cautious. We will maintain a good level of provision buffer to protect us against any unforeseen risks. One of the other encouraging facts during this quarter is the penetration of digital payments. If you recall, we had highlighted in the last earnings call that we will end this year with about 70% non-cash and 30% cash payments. We were at about 57-43 as of last quarter. But this quarter, we have actually made a very significant improvement on that. We are at about 65% of non-cash payments and 35% of cash payments. So to achieve the number of 70-30 that we had guided you seems a very, very comfortable position for us. At this point of time, we don't want to revisit our guidance, but the 70-30 is extremely achievable for us. So that is another positive that we have achieved during this quarter. So given all of these things, we had one of the best quarters in terms of profit after tax at 252 crores, a growth of 37% year-on-year and 7% on a sequential quarter-on-quarter basis. Our net worth stands at about close to 5,500 crores. It's at 5,450 crores. So again, we have demonstrated good performance across profitability, quality and growth, which will continue in the quarters to come. With these opening remarks, we'll open out for any questions that any of you may have. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one on their touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking a question. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. The first question is from the line of Mahrukh Adanjaria from Nuvama Capital. Please go ahead.
Hello, congratulations on the results and on the 10,000 crore mark. I just had a couple of questions. Firstly, on your liquidity. So now, do you see yourself maintaining such excess liquidity for a long period of time? Because I guess the liquidity buffer has kind of increased over the last three, four quarters, right? As in the level of liquidity buffer. Would that continue for some more time? And then the other question is that there's varied feedback from lenders on how heat wave has impacted collections. Yours don't seem to be impacted in any big way. So any comments you would offer on how you could have good collections in an otherwise bad quarter?
For others, sorry.
That's what I'm
Thank you, Mahrukh. Let me take up the second question, then Srikanth will come in for the first question. It was a tough quarter for all lenders. Generally, after pulling back everything from customers in March, generally there will be a muted quarter for June. Let it be banks or non-banks, the trend is same. But what happened in this June was prolonged elections and prolonged heat wave had an impact on the cash flows of the customers. Adding to it, the June was the school season. So people have to pay their kids' school fees. So there was three challenges for every lender. I'm not talking about Five Star, for each and every lender at retail level where they have one or two loans to repay, it was not a easy for the customers to repay the EMIs on time. But as I said, we have a very strong collection infrastructure at the ground level. This helps during these kind of things, and we are able to monitor this very well because we know that May and June is going to be the difficult one. So we had a good strategy, collection strategy put in place in May and June. That has really given a good effect. There was a small blip, as I said in the opening remarks, from the collection efficiency. And you see DPD, that's a small dip in each of the buckets. That will get corrected in due course of time. So I can even give you the update of July, which closed yesterday. It gives an encouraging sign, and it is better than the June month collections. We have to wait and see how August and September turns out for Five Star. But yes, because of expected one and because of strategy put in place, our impact was a bit lesser compared to other lenders. Yes, I also saw other lenders' numbers. Yes, Five Star is fortunate to have lesser impact comparing to them.
So, Mahrukh, on your question on the liquidity buffer that we are maintaining, our intention is to maintain around 15 to 17% of our AUM in the form of liquidity. This is broadly the thumb rule that even bigger NBFCs are actually following. And we would like to maintain at about 15 to 17%. We are probably 1 to 2% higher than that. But if you look at from a trajectory perspective, this number has been coming down. We were at about 20% of our AUM that we had as liquidity in December. That has actually dropped to about 18% as we speak. See, it is not a question of the fact that we want to have a higher liquidity buffer. It is also a question of the kind of sanctions that we get. What are the sanctions that can be accommodated and what are the sanctions that can be, you know, pushed out a little bit. So there is a little bit of balancing act that we play on this. But we will definitely ensure that we maintain about 15 to 17% liquidity. And, you know, a percentage of or two higher will be because of, you know, specific names that we have been looking at onboarding. If they come in, like for example, IFC could not have been tranched out, but we needed IFC and hence we had to take the entire 500 crores. There are still 400 crores of undrawn sanctions that we have as we speak. So it's a balancing act that we do, but about 15-17% is what we would like to maintain in a steady state scenario.
Okay, thanks a lot. Thank you.
Thank you very much. The next question is from the line of Raghav Garg from Ambit Capital. Please go ahead.
Hey, hi. Thanks for the opportunity. I have a few questions. So one is, you know, on the business officers side, I see that the addition to business officers is nearly flat this quarter, whereas, you know, in the last several quarters, you seem to have beefed it up. So what's the thought process here behind no addition of these officers? Is it that you hired a lot in the last 4-5-6 quarters and you want to utilize that capacity first? That's my first question.
So Raghav, in the last earnings call, we explained to all of you that the strategy from a branch expansion perspective is divided into two parts. One part is what we call as a split branch or a cluster approach, wherein one bigger branch is getting broken and bigger branch, we're opening another new branch. So when this happens, there is a set of officers who get transferred from an existing branch to the newly opened split branch. So this constituted about 50% of the branch openings last year. And the balance 50% is all completely, you know, branches that have started from the scratch. So if you look at in the first quarter of this year, we opened about, 27 branches. Again, the split is very similar. So wherein a number of new branches have been opened, which is just a split from an existing previously big branch. And when this happens, officers get transferred from the bigger branch to the newly opened smaller branches. So it's not a linear addition of officers with respect to the branch openings. This is what is also giving us the leg up in terms of little bit of lower operational costs that you can see reflected in our financials.
Understand. That is why it's leading to a higher number of accounts being handled for employees. Is that right? Just the segregation of branches, in terms of new branches and cluster expansion.
Correct.
Understood. And just out of the
Raghav, just to clarify it further, it is not higher number of accounts given to an officer. Where an officer had a lower number of accounts, it has been adjusted in last quarter.
Okay, sure. Understood on that part. Just out of that 27, how much of that would have been because of the cluster expansion and how much of those branches are completely new?
So roughly it is 50-50.
Okay. And just one last question on, in terms of the number of loan accounts or loans disbursed, the growth is about 11%. There is quite a bit of moderation. Where do you see this number in terms of growth for FY25 and, on a sustainable basis for, say, next 3-4 years?
Raghav, are you talking about the AUM growth?
No, I'm talking about the number of new loans disbursed in this quarter.
Number of new loans disbursed. See, the point that we are saying is that is linked to the overall disbursal quantum that we are looking at. So, for example, between last year and this year, our disbursals are expected to go up by about 25-27%. And with a little bit of push up in the ticket size, which will come because of inflationary increases, you will probably see the number of loans growth by about 20-22%. Rather than getting to 25-27% kind of a number. So I would say broadly anywhere around 18-20% is the number of loans that will keep growing up on a, that will be the disbursal number on a quarter on quarter basis.
So Raghav, there are three things for the growth to kick in for 5-star. The first one is the branch addition. I'll restate that even in this year, we'll be adding close to 80-90 new branches and close to 100 split branches. So the numbers will be close to 200 branch count, whereas new branches will be 80-90, and the rest will be the split branches, as Ranga explained, to handle the risk better. That's the first lever. The second lever is addition of officers. That will also be done in this year. Third is increase in ticket size. We have been doing it at 3.5. This year it will be close to 4. So all three levers put together, I'm very confident that we'll be growing at 30% plus for the full financial year.
Understood. That's helpful. Thanks a lot for some answers.
Yeah. Thank you, Rob.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Renish Bhuva from ICICI Securities. Please go ahead.
Yeah. Hi, sir. And congrats on a good set of numbers. So just two things. One on the disbursement growth run rate side, which has been falling since Q2, which has been now decelerated to 16% YOY. I can understand that it's a seasonally, but still, and hence we are looking at the YoY growth and not the sequential growth. And also, when I look at the disbursement per branch on a two-quarter like basis, just to eliminate the impact of new branch opening, that run rate is now fallen to 2.7 crore in Q1 FY25 from the peak of 3 crore in FY24. So how one should read this data? I mean, a fall in disbursement per branch, also deceleration in disbursement growth run rate.
Yeah, Ranesh, let me clarify to all shareholders who are there in the call. Don't go run rate per branch for next at least for 18 months because, as Ranga said, there is a clear-cut strategy for Five-Star to make all super branches into split branches and bring the number of officers, which were close to 15 officers in a branch, close to 8 officers in a branch. That addresses a lot of risk and that also spreads our wings across the geographies wherever we are present. So you have to only look at the AUM growth metric for at least next 3 to 4 quarters because if you go by branch count, it will be looking like as if the business done in a branch has come down. It's not like that. For example, if a super branch would have been done 2 crores business in a month, when the super branch has been split into two ideal branches, the run rate still be at 1.25, but it will be read as 1.25 per branch. So that's not the right metric is what I think Ranga and Shrikant can clarify on that too. But you have to see the AUM growth on quarter-on-quarter, year-on-year, where Five-Star wants to put up. That's what I gave the commitment that even for this financial year, there is no change in our guidance. We will be at 30% plus growth for the full year. For the first quarter, we have grown more than 7% and we'll be comfortably crossing 30% for this full year. And June being a seasonal one, and we have pulled out a lot of business in March month, there will be a slight drop in the June month, which will get corrected in the September, December, March months. That's how every lender will look at that annual growth.
No, no, sir. My question is more on the disbursement growth side, right? I mean, it has been running at some 40-50% YoY growth, then it fell to 33% in Q3, then it fell to 20% in Q4, and now it is at 16%. So I can totally understand, the branch metrics which you just highlighted. But then the deceleration in disbursement growth rate, it explains that there is a
Ranesh, the disbursement slowdown is here to stay, not only for Five-Star, for every lender in this country. You will see the slowdown in disbursement. It's not because of the opportunity is coming down. We have to also take into account what is the regulatory thought process and what is the regulatory commentary which we are hearing on a day-to-day and a quarter-on-quarter basis. So we should also be mindful of that. I said in the last quarter itself, let the dust all get settled. Let our asset quality speak for ourselves. I think then the growth will be back on the same numbers what you have been referring to.
So Ranesh, it is also a question of a little bit of muted disbursements during COVID. So if you're comparing, let us say, 22 to 23, where the disbursement number was much higher, it is not because 23 was significantly higher. It was because 22 was muted and 24 saw, some bit of a pent-up demand as well. So you will see some moderation happening. I think those two are a little bit of years where you had some aberrations because of the base effect. But otherwise, like I said, if we are looking at a 32% kind of a growth on our AUM, the disbursement growth will be more around 25 to 27%. Because there will be some bit of ticket size increases and we are lending for a 7-year tenor. So it won't go tandem hand-to-hand with the AUM growth. There will be about 4-5 percentage points difference between the AUM growth and the disbursement growth.
Got it. In fact, my last question was on this repayment rate side, right? So, we have been always highlighting that our behavioral tenure for loans is 7 years, right? But when we look at the repayment rate, it is hovering around 22 to 25%, which means you know, the behavioral tenure is much less. I mean, of course, including prepayments, BT out, etc. And when we look at last three quarters con, it is actually turns out to be some 7% sequentially, which is on annualized basis, you know, upwards of 25%. So how one should look at the actual tenure of your loans? Because then eventually it will start impacting the growth, you know, if disbursement doesn't come.
So you are right. I think one point that I want to correct in what you said is, we always say that the origination tenure is about 6 to 6.5 years. While the behavior tenor is more like 4 to 4.5 years. So you are right to the extent that you will see about 20 to 23%, 22 to 23% kind of a run rate, you know, runoff every year, which will translate roughly to about 4.5 years of behavioral tenor. So I think that's a number that's broadly remained range bound for the last 4 or 5 years, and we don't see that number significantly changing in the coming years as well. So there will be normal repayments, and there will be some level of prepayments, which has also largely remained range bound between, you know, 9 to 12% on a year-on-year basis.
Got it. And so, just last question, if I may. So, what is the reason for you know, moderation in credit costs? You know, which is again a reflection of foreign stage two stage three provision, despite of the fact that collection and 1+ DPD is up sequentially.
So, Ramesh, I think we have been building this credit cost over the last couple of years, and it sort of has reached a stage where we are comfortable with these numbers. So, if you look at the PDs and LGDs, if we don't build some overlays, our PDs and LGDs will result in a credit cost that will be much lower than the ECL provision that we are carrying today. So, our thought process is, there is something that gets thrown by the model. There are specific overlay factors that we use to build the management overlays on ECL, and we are comfortable around the number that we are carrying. So it is not a question of the credit cost decreasing because we wanted to decrease it. It is a question of the model and the factors that we use for overlays, which gives us a number, and we are comfortable around that number. We, like I said, the stage 2 provision of around...
I just wanted to reconfirm that we have not change PD LGDs. It is might be a little lower overlay this quarter, might have led to the sequential decline rate. I mean, is that the fair conclusion?
PDs and LGDs are getting a little better. For example, last year you saw the current proportion going up significantly from about 83% to 87%. So that obviously brings down the PDs, and the fact that we are able to recover well is also reflecting on a lower LGD. So there is some improvement in PDs and LGDs as we keep increasing the data. And it is also a question of using the last 5 years' data, right? So you have the earlier quarters going out and the later quarters coming in. 5 years back, our DPDs were not as good as this. So you will always see improvement in PDs and LGDs. But we sort of ensure that we build some management overlays. So to get to a number that the company, the board, the management, and the auditors feel comfortable with.
Got it, sir. This is very helpful, sir. Thank you and best of luck, sir.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Abhijit Tibrewal from Motilal Oswal. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you and good morning, everyone. Congratulations on getting a good quarter and crossing that important milestone, 10,000 crores in AUM. Sir, first things first, wanted to understand this very good improvement in cash proportion in collections, which has declined to 35% now. For the full year, you're still guiding for cash collections to decline to 30%. Just trying to understand what are those efforts that have gone into this to kind of get here. Because like you'll recall, right, this was also something which was very widely debated, cash proportion being high in the past. Sometime last year, this used to be as high as 60%. So just trying to understand what changes have you done? And I mean, do you now expect these things to be permanent and structural in terms of change in employee, in terms of change in customer behavior?
So, Abhijit, over the last 2 years, I would say that we have consistently been increasing the modes in which the customer can make a payment, and most of it that we have introduced is all digital modes of payment. So we first introduced a payment app wherein the customer can log in into the app and then make a payment at any point of time. We have a tie-up with Razorpay for this. So a customer can make an app payment or a payment through our website. But I think the next big game changer started for us when we tied up with the BBPS. So today a customer can log into any of the popular BBPS apps, which is Google Pay or Phone Pay, and then make a payment to us through the UPI. And I think that's a very big game changer for us. I think the next strategy that we introduced is that every passbook that we give to the customer, we started printing that with a very specific QR code, wherein the customer can directly just scan the QR code and make a very specific payment to his account at the convenience of sitting from his home. This we started from January. And I think from May this year, we have started another big thing, which is for all fresh payments, fresh disbursements that we make starting from the month of May, the UPI autopay sign-up is mandatory for the customer. So which means unless the UPI autopay is set up prior to the disbursement, we will not make the disbursement. Earlier, this used to be an offline process. And there's a lot of translation errors, between the time that you make a disbursement and actually the NACH mandate getting set up. Because there could be a number of reasons, like it's an inoperative account or it's a signature mismatch or, any number of reasons where the customer can find excuses of not signing up for a NACH mandate post a disbursement. But when you make that as a compulsory precondition prior to the disbursement, we are seeing huge uptake on that. And today, for 100% of the cases that is happening, but it's not necessary that 100% of the customers will still make a UPI payment. But I think, the effort is everybody signs up. Very few number of customers may not have the, monies in their UPI account and on the time of the repayment date. They can always come back and pay through any other means or any other digital means. But at least the efforts of the company side is very clear that unless you have an UPI, unless you do an auto UPI mandate with us prior to the disbursement, we will not be able to disburse. So I think these are, clear structural changes that we have made it on the ground and more customers are adopting for it. We have guided in the beginning of the year that we will be at about 70% digital payments, and I'm fairly confident that we should cross that number comfortably.
So just to add one point, and from even from the customer's behavioral aspect, there's a quite good bit of change that we were able to see. We were not able to get it right 2 years before. We thought the cash still is the king at the ground level, but a lot of change has happened in last 2 years. And when we approached whatever Ranga said in last 24 months, that is yielding as a much faster effect rather than a slower one. So we are very confident that except that little rural market, people still wanted to pay by cash. In semi-urban and fast-growing rural market, people adoption in digital payments are much higher, and encouraging to see that our people are able to convince the customers and move towards that. So all put together, I think we are good to go with 70s to 30. And revisit after the March where we can take the 70 numbers to.
Got it, sir. This is useful. So, sir, effectively speaking now, I mean, from March onwards, all disbursements that we will be doing will have a free condition of an UPI autopay.
Yeah, but it's from May onwards.
Yeah, from May onwards, sir. Sir, the second question I had was for Srikanth, sir. Sir, given, I mean, yesterday's Fed meeting and the fact that there are now rate cuts which are there on the horizon, given that we still have almost 75% of our borrowings coming from banks, you could just elaborate how have we kind of positioned ourselves on that side in terms of fixed to floating, or for that matter, a 3 month or a 6 month MCLR, how are we positioned and how can we benefit from any rate cuts? That's it.
So, Vijit, our breakup, in fact, we had given this in our presentation, our breakup between fixed and floating today, we are at about 65% floating and 35% fixed. It went up a little bit because of the NCD issuance that we did to IFC. So, which is why the floating is at 65%. And given the fact that we are also moving slightly away from our strategy of, borrowing from banks, the floating will be a little lesser because the rest of the facilities typically tend to be fixed, especially on securitizations and all that. On the floating, if we look at the breakup of this, the floating proportion, We have about 70% of that which is linked to MCLR and about 30% which are linked to the external benchmark rate. And even on the external benchmark rate, most of it, 75% of the EBR linked facilities are linked to repo. So very clearly, if there is a benefit that is going to come through the rate cuts, we will definitely stand to benefit immediately from the day that the repo rate cut starts becoming effective, at least on about 30% of our facilities. On the balance 70% of our floating rate facilities, most of these are either a 1 year MCLR or a 6 month MCLR. So at various points of time, these benefits will come in. It will not come bunched up. It depends on when we have taken the facility and whether it's a 6 month or a 1 year MCLR. But I would say from the day of the rate cut over the course of the next 12 months, we should see a significant benefit coming on at least the 65% of our borrowings.
Got it, sir. Thank you. And the last question that I had is, I mean, while I think in last earnings call, you were guiding for credit cost of about 70 to 80 basis points for this year. A related question here is, I mean, how are we kind of looking at the provision coverage ratio on stage 2, stage 3? I mean, likely to maintain at similar levels or there is a thought process that given that collections are improving, cash collections are coming down, non-cash improving, is there an idea to kind of bring down the provisioning cover going ahead? Maybe not just couple of quarters, but maybe over the next 1 or 2 years.
So obviously the first point on the credit cost guidance, the guidance still stands at around 70 to 80 basis points. While this quarter we are reflecting about 61 basis points, it also has a proportion of write-off. So broadly about 30 basis points, we have written off about 7 crores of loan books. So roughly the 60 basis points is spread into 30 and 30, which is incremental provision of about 7 odd crores and of about 9 crores and about the balance coming in from write-offs. See, we will continue to do some technical write-offs purely for tax purposes as well, and given that the regulations permit these technical write-offs. So at this point, we are not changing the guidance on the credit cost. We continue to be at about 70 to 80 basis points for the foreseeable future. In terms of the provision coverage, we are comfortable, you know, holding this number at this point of time. Our general thumb rule is about 50% provision coverage on stage 3 assets and the overall provision coverage of 1.5 to 1.6%. We are at about 1.63%. I don't think you will see any significant benefit to come in the short-term future in terms of release of provisions. But if we are seeing, you know, significant improvement in the portfolio, if you are seeing the factors which we have used for building overlays are not really, you know, coming out in reality, then we may have to relook at, you know, both the model as well as the overlay, which may probably bring down the provision. But at this point of time, you know, we are not giving you a guidance for any betterment or release of our provisions. We will continue to be broadly at where we are. And given that the P&L has the ability to absorb the provisions that we are creating, why should we refrain from creating some buffers in good days which can take care of us in the rainy days? So I don't think we are going to be aggressive in our provisions. We'll be a lot more conservative.
Got it, sir. This is very useful. Congratulations again and all the very best to you and your team.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Viral Shah from IIFL Capital. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi, sir. Thank you. And first of all, congratulations on the milestone. Actually, I have a few questions. From the perspective of quarter, was there any one-off in the other income because we saw a sharp increase on a sequential basis?
So, Viral, you are looking at the non-operating income line?
Correct.
So, see, this will be, you know, other costs like, you know, storage costs and, you know, the fees that we get for the storage costs and all that. So, while you are seeing, you know, a 5 million to a 1.4 million number, this is not a very material number. So, it will broadly be, you know, the storage fees that we collect from the customers you know, for storing their documents, which is typically upfronted.
Got it. And Shrikant, while you are at it, on your last previous comment with regards to the PCR, while I understand, of course, the eventual LGDs, especially on stage 3, are not to the extent of what PCR we have, but I believe there is a soft regulatory nudge also to believe of maintaining a 50% PCR. Would that be right?
So, Viral, we would have probably guided you otherwise, but we are guiding 50% today because there is a expectation that we also see, because our LGDs are much lower on a very big portion of our lending book. Our LGDs will be probably more closer to about 10 to 12% number. So, you know, even a 50% is a far-fetched estimate. But you're right. Yes, there is some bit of a regulatory expectation in terms of maintaining a good cover on the stage 3 assets, which is why, you know, we are guiding the market for a 50% PCR.
Got it. And my next question is for Mr. Pati and Ranga. So in this quarter, we have seen that in the rural markets and especially for the MFI borrowers, the collection efficiencies as well as the asset quality has kind of worsened. In that environment, I understand the for us also, but it was nowhere to the extent of what we have seen. So have you seen some bit of prioritization amongst the borrowers to, say, repay the secured loans and that they have their house as a mortgage? Versus the other views that they would have?
So Viral, you are absolutely right. That's the underwriting model that what Five-Star took 22 years back. Our underwriting is not for good times. Our underwriting is only for the bad times. So that's why in last 22 years, Five-Star is able to survive all big falls where bigger banks and NBFCs were not able to survive. So you're right. In terms of cash flow deterioration in a family, because Five-Star takes the family income and puts all the family members as part of the agreement, there will be a, you know, choice of customer whom to pay. So generally, he tends to pay the mortgage loans. That's what you see in HFC and mortgage lenders like Five-Star. Are not affected when there is a bit of cash flow dent happening, not permanently, and just for a few months because of the heat wave, elections and school fees, what I said. Yes, this is a trend that you will see always, and that will not change in the middle class mindsets of our country.
Got it. And lastly, in terms of the yields that we have, right, again over here also there has been a regulatory nudge for not just MFI lenders but even small ticket lenders that basically there is should be some moderation in that, and we have been talking about taking a rate cuts. Any updates on that, and how are you thinking about it going into FY25?
Viral, let me be very clear, maybe crystal clear, that there is no discussion between Five-Star and regulators on the pricing front, right? I think regulators have seen us for last 5 years, and not a discussion they had or we had with them on the pricing side. It's a market driven, and it's an underwriting risk that what the company has that fixes the board fixes the pricing. So there is no point on even discussing about that, whether regulator has any concern or not. Regulator has absolutely no concern from Five-Star's perspective. So let me be very clear and crystal clear about that. And yes, we have been saying to the market that we will be passing on our benefits, what we got from the banking side. We were waiting for the rate cut to happen across the world, and especially in our country, but that we are not seeing. But you will see Five-Star cutting a bit of rates in this financial year. I can say you it will be around 50 to 75 bips of the rates, because what benefit that we got from the bank for last 2 years, we are happy to say that we'll be passing on to the customer in the due course for the all new customers who are getting logged in Five-Star from now to March. So that's the approach that what Five-Star has been taken, and we have been vocal on this. We have been telling from the first con call ever since that we met you, that we will be passing on a good rate cut for our customers once the rate cut announcement is there in our country. But it is taking some time, but we want to go first. So you will see a rate cut of 50 to 75 bits in next 9 months to go.
Got it, sir. Very clear. And thank you so much and all the best.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Chandrasekhar Sridhar from Fidelity International. Please go ahead.
Hi, good morning. Few questions. Maybe just on the business growth, Tamil Nadu is now down to about 20% per annum. If you just take us through what's happening in Tamil Nadu, I mean, the bulk of the delta is actually coming from Andhra and Telangana. So any particular change? I mean, I can see there is a competitor, NBFC, which has also started off in a fairly large way. In this space, a larger NBFC. Just thoughts around that, whether it's, you know, and that's their home market, whether it affects the competitive positioning over there. And you know, MP was basically a market also where we had, you know, gotten a foothold, but it's sort of growing at where the company is growing at. Is there any, you know, any particular challenges which you face there? That's question one. Second two questions for Srikanth. One, you know, I think there was an expectation that the cost of funds would go up marginally because you're diversifying into NCDs and, you need to pay up a little more because you're not getting your tenors. It's not going up. So just maybe take us through what's there. And then lastly, we have now crossed 10,000 crores. Will we be having conversations with rating agencies around the ratings upgrades and you know, what is any potential implications on the cost of borrowing? Thank you.
Good morning, Chandra. I'll take the first question. I'll ask Srikanth to come into second and I'll also comment on the third. Chandra, from the first question, I'll take it up Tamil Nadu and Ranga will talk about MP. Nothing has happened in Tamil Nadu, Chandra. We are going as usual in Tamil Nadu. I'm just recollecting what I said in last call or last two calls. Tamil Nadu growth was not catching up with the growth of Andhra and Telangana. They were extremely growing very well, both from a team perspective, quality of files perspective, supervision team perspective, all were setting very well in combined Andhra, what we call as Andhra and Telangana put together. To that level, Tamil Nadu was not able to catch up. That's the only thing that what we saw Tamil Nadu's as a share coming down for Five Star. But I have told that this year you'll see Tamil Nadu and Karnataka. I've also been saying to the market that Karnataka turnaround story is very good for Five Star, where we had a bit of slip in COVID and post-COVID, and it was getting corrected, and now they are one of the best performing states for Five Star. So Tamil Nadu and Karnataka will catch up this year with Andhra and Telangana. So that's the south story. That's where the confidence comes in that we'll be delivering a 30% plus growth in south very comfortably. So I will hand it over to Ranga on a MP perspective.
Just there is no competitive intensity being higher impacting in any way.
Chandra, can you come again?
Yeah, just the competitive intensity.
Sir, Chandra, I will not say only in Tamil Nadu. Across all states, you see many companies jumping into small business loans, especially after seeing Five Star success. For 8 quarters, they have been watching us closely, both from a quality as well as profitability perspective. Yes, people are jumping in to do bits here and there. That's the nature of the good business. That doesn't have any big impact in Tamil Nadu. As I said, Tamil Nadu team is not able to catch up the Andhra and Telangana speed. With this year put in place, and I've met all Tamil Nadu guys last month, I'm very confident this year Tamil Nadu will see a good rise comparing to themselves what they were in last year.
Okay. Chandra, with respect to Central India, I think the challenges are a little bit different. You know, the first thing is in Central India, our ticket size is almost 40% lower than the ticket size that we see in South. So despite that, if we are able to maintain, you know, the proportion of the overall AUM in Central India, it is, it in fact means that, you know, the productivities are higher, but the ticket sizes are lower. On a standalone basis, if you look at MP or MH, I think each of this is growing at about 50% CAGR last year, while the company grew at about 35-36% CAGR. But that said, I think we are very clear and we are investing more in Central India. You will start to see the proportion of Central India slowly going up from here. It is not going to happen in a hurry. We don't want it to happen in a hurry because, you know, these are newer markets. You have to be extremely calibrated with what you have to do. But 100% we are very clear that the markets will go up and there are enough investments that are happening on the ground. Even this quarter, out of the 27 branches that we have opened, 14 branches are put up between Maharashtra, Madhya Pradesh and, you know, other Central Indian geographies. So we are very clear and keenly watching and investing in these states and the proportion will go up.
Chandra, on your question on the cost of funds expectation to go up, first of all, you know, thank you for asking this question because we don't want any of you guys to think that, you know, every quarter we are going to keep dropping our incremental rates. At some point, it definitely has to go up. So, see, the reason it has not gone up during this quarter is a couple of conversations that we've been having with capital markets, especially on the mutual funds where the rates tend to be higher, has not completely materialized. Like I said, you know, most of those transactions are expected to happen either in this quarter, which is Q2 or in Q3. So you will definitely see a jump up in the cost of funds in the next quarter. So given that these did not happen last quarter, you probably saw the rate going down from 958 to 949 or so. But definitely the number will inch up once we have capital market transactions coming in. So that is in terms of the cost of funds expectation on the incremental borrowing. See, on the rating discussions, this is something that we have crossed 10,000 crores. It's a very important landmark for us, for the rating agencies. But our rating, the earliest rating agency that gave us the upgrade, gave it to us in December of 2022, so which is like 1.5 years now. So 1.5 years is a little shorter time for us to push for a rating upgrade, given that it has also been 2 years of good growth. And in fact, ICRA and CARE, they are not even, they are, you know, about a year, the rating is about a year old and 15 months old with CARE and ICRA respectively. But having said that, we are having very strong conversations with them. We are demonstrating using our numbers why we should probably command, you know, higher, one notch higher rating than where we are today. But realistically, I would probably think the best case, you know, if I have to put my neck out and say, is probably, you know, end of this calendar year or end of this year, or the, you know, the more reasonable and the logical case would be if we are able to go to the March results, March 25 results. You know, I would say it has a very high probability of getting converted. But I would probably think it's at least 2 to 3 quarters away.
Maybe just last one, if I could just squeeze in, can you just remind me right now the share of AUM which is in for personal purposes versus business purposes?
Sorry?
Business versus other, sir.
Sorry, Chandra, share of AUM
in business, used in the business versus, you know, for non-business purposes?
Broadly about 65-35.
Got it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Nischint Chawathe from Kotak Institutional Equities. Please go ahead.
Yeah, so this is on the interest rate cut of around 50-75 basis points. So from when are we really cutting it? And I believe this is again only for new loans.
Yes, Nishant. In fact, I think we will probably be introducing this as early as this month, which is the month of August. So sometime during this month is what we are looking at. And yes, this will be on incremental loans. So you will not see the yields dropping by 50-75 basis points. You will probably see it dropping by one-third of the 50-75 basis points because it will take time to impact the portfolio yield.
And is there a particular
plan or a thought process in place, maybe for next year or something, you know, in terms of saying that you would want to sort of, you know, take it down every year by a couple of basis points and sort of move up the quality curve?
Nishint, not really. Let me recollect what I've been saying to the market. We got a 150 to 200 bits of rate benefit from the banks. Those out of that, at least 50% we wanted to pass it on to the customer. That's the background. It's not of what is the NIMs that we are holding and what is the pricing that we are lending. That's not the point. The point is we've been saying to the market for a long time, we were waiting for the rate cut to happen in our country in last September itself. That didn't happen. So we wanted to move forward and give the benefit what we got from the banks to the customers. So it only depends upon the bank benefit what we got to transfer to the customers. So next year, we can't give a commentary right now without knowing what is the fresh benefit that we are going to get from the banks. This is only for this financial year.
Got it. Perfect. Thank you very much and all the best.
Thank you.
The next question is from the line of Ajit Kumar from Nomura. Please go ahead.
Thanks for the opportunity and congratulations for the milestone. Most of my questions have been answered. Just one or two quick questions. First, following up on your ECL methodology, just wanted to know how many years of data do you factor in the model and has it changed in recent time? And also at what frequency do you revise or reassess your model assumptions?
So we follow as per the Ind AS guidelines, Ajit. I think it's 5 years data that we use. So it's the last 5 years data. So every year the previous year's data goes out, or every quarter the previous quarter's data goes out and the newer quarter comes in, which is as per the accounting standards. Typically, we look at this model once in 3 years.
Okay, sure. And one last question, you know, harping on this incremental cost of fund, which has gone down sequentially, from which stream of funding this decline is coming? Is it majorly from bank funding where pricing has come off or from bond market borrowings?
So we have not done much bond market borrowings, Ajit, during this quarter. So which is why you're not seeing this cost of funds going up. So largely banks are willing to lend to us at lower rates. Even the ISP funding that we got was at lower rates. So I think it's broadly a number that's coming from DFIs and banks, which has contributed to the lower rate. I think once we get to the capital market participants, be it the mutual funds or the others, this cost will probably look like, you know, more around 960, 965 rather than 948.
Sure. Thank you. That's it for my side.
Thank you.
The next question is from the line of Kunal Garg from IIFL Securities. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Am I audible?
Yeah, Kunal.
Yeah, hi, sir. Congratulations for the good set of numbers. So my question is primarily on the, you mentioned that there are few states where you see the downward trajectory in the business, right? So may I know the specific states where you see the stress in the coming months? Or in the coming quarter?
So Kunal, can you come back? So we didn't say there is any stress in any state in our commentary. What is that you are saying?
Sir, you mentioned that there was some business down in the TN and Karnataka, right? Compared to the AP and Telangana.
No. What I said was the catch-up by Tamil Nadu was not equal to the catch-up of Andhra and Telangana. The Telangana and Andhra catch-up speed was much higher than Tamil Nadu was what I am referring. And there was no any issue or a problem in Tamil Nadu state. And I was giving a commentary saying that in this year, Tamil Nadu will catch up much better than what they were doing last year. There was no stress or any strain in Tamil Nadu and Karnataka.
So the business growth will be continued in this Tamil Nadu and Karnataka as per the previous year, right?
Yeah, very much so, and it will be very stronger this year.
Okay. And this is my second question is, have you given any top-up loans this quarter?
So, Kunal, we generally do top-up loans, but top-up loans is a very, very small proportion of our disbursals. I don't know, in the last few calls also that we have been that they've been taking. Our top-up loans are more like about 4-5%. That's you know, that's what we give. In fact, if you look at the overall book, the top-ups, repeats, borrowers who close their loan and come back for another loan, all put together will be more like 8-10%. So that's not a big source of disbursements for Five Star or a business line for Five Star. Our business line primarily is to go into unpenetrated and underpenetrated markets and get fresh borrowers from the informal to the formal ecosystem.
Okay. And so my third question is, you mentioned that from May onwards, you have made mandatory for UPI autopay, right? So, this whether you are is this condition is 100% successful, or still there are some pockets where you are giving some relaxation?
So it's near to 100%, Kunal. So they can either choose for a UPI autopay or they can choose for a NACH, online NACH. Both these mandates have to be set up prior to the disbursement. See, we always had this condition, but the earlier condition was it can also be done post the disbursement, because some of this was offline and offline takes a lot more time for us. Now what we changed from the month of May is that you have to do an online registration, which means the mandate is set up in favor of Five Star prior to the disbursement. And this is near to 100. There will always be corner cases, but almost near to 100.
Okay. Thank you, sir, and best of luck.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Rohan from FICOM Family Office. Please go ahead.
Hello, sir. Thank you so much for the opportunity. I have two quick questions. So so if you look at the MSME LAP segment, that has been a high growth area for also some of the smaller peers. However, with a smaller average ticket size. So is that smaller ticket size, does that interest you? And what is the risk versus reward dynamics here? And the minimum average ticket size that you would take on?
See, Rohan, Five Star ventured into secured business loans to the informal segment of this country 22 years back. We clearly understood what was the risk and what is the reward that we'll be getting when you venture into this kind of profile of customers. This is what is getting reflected in last 22 years. Yes, you have a risk and you have a good reward for that. How does you balance that is what differentiates you as a good lender. Yes, 100% of our loans are secured. As Srikanth said, close to 60% goes to the business end use and balance 40% goes to the housing, constructions and personal needs of these customers. The risk is, these customers have a bit of vulnerable cash flows, and when they get into more unsecured borrowing in the market, that tends to go to a little more vulnerable. But as I said in last one of the questions, when a choice is being given to these customers during the downturn, whom to pay, they very clearly pay to a mortgage lender. Let it be a housing finance company or mortgage lenders like Five Star. Their choice is always to us. That's what it reflects during COVID-1, COVID-2, or the first quarter collection efficiency, what Five Star was is able to do is a benchmark of HFCs, what they have done in this country. So this is a trend. This is a risk that you have to go through. And having done very successfully, yes, there are a lot of followers of Five Star who intend to get into this segment. But if they don't understand the risk, if they don't see the cycles before pressing the growth, there will be a serious dent for their asset quality, and that will slow down the growth going forward. And Five Star has learned it very well, and we have been a learner for the first 10 years and then the growers for next 10 years of our life. That's how we do it.
All right. Got it, sir. And can you also explain on your borrowing strategy, what's the rationale for moving away from bank borrowing?
So, Rohan, the rationale is a little simple. See, today there are a lot of banks who are willing to lend to Five Star.
given our asset quality, given our growth and profitability, they see this as a very attractive institution that they can lend to. But I'm sure you would also be aware that there has been some pointers from RBI telling that the institution would also, NBFC should look at diversifying their borrowings, get a little more into the capital market and all that. And when we become a double A entity, we are also mandated by SEBI to onboard incrementally 25% of our borrowings from capital market. So given all of these thought process, we have now taken a very conscious call that we will get into the capital market. We will be fully prepared for any eventualities that may come or fully prepared when we become a double A entity. So some of these are, in response to external factors that we are doing. But if we have to borrow from the banks, I think there are enough and more banks which are ready today. But having said that, it's always good to have diversification in any of your streams, which is the strategy that we are following.
All right. Got it, sir. Thank you so much for taking that question.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Rajiv Mehta from YES Securities. Please go ahead.
Yeah. Hi, good morning. Congrats on strong numbers. Sir, you had spoken about July collection trends being better than June. So is it better in across buckets? I mean, is it better in regular bucket as well as in the delinquent buckets of 30, 60, 90 as well when compared to June?
Rajiv, I have just seen it last night. I have not gone detailed to it, but overall, our performance comparing to June was better. It should be better across states, across buckets. There will not be any significant difference between overall as well as the bucket-wise.
Okay. And just
maybe Rajiv, we can connect offline to from.
Yeah, yeah.
I'll ask Srikanth to connect offline so he gets more data when he has it.
Yes. And sir, just taking forward one comment that you made, that typically in a stressed situation, the household prioritizes prepaying you versus their unsecured loans. But generally, do we so first is the categorization of those loans will be current with us. But so in the current portfolio, do we have what proportion of our customers would have a default on their unsecured lines but are current with us? Do we track them differently?
No, Rajiv, we don't track our customers. We track them before lending a loan in a detailed way. We take at least minimum of two credit bureaus, Highmark and CIBIL, before lending. But after lending, we don't track them from a credit bureau perspective. We track them based on the DPDs and what should the company do when he falls down the DPD, what are the measures that we have to take. That is pretty much in place. It's not that current accounts or one DPD customers are being tracked from a number of loans that they have taken. And we don't have any control, and we can't stop this unless until the other lenders are more clearer that once you see a bigger loan taken by the customer, generally we should avoid lending to those customers. If that discipline is not there with other unsecured lenders, we can't do anything on that.
Okay.
Just to add one point here. See, when we have taken this at points of time, I think what Mr. Pathy is trying to say is that we don't do this on a regular basis. Like every quarter, we don't do a bureau scrub to see, where other customers are vis-a-vis with us. But I think when we have taken it at points of time, and we have done it quite a few times in the past, especially during stress times. So if we have done it during demonetization, we have done it during COVID-1, COVID-2, at that point of time, the behavior is very clear in terms of priority of repayments. And that's what gives us the confidence that, yeah, when it comes to stress and when customers are forced to make a choice between repayment of a secured loan versus an unsecured loan, they always tend to choose secured loans, especially if it's an emotionally important asset to the family.
Clear, sir. And just one observation, when I look at AUM branch tier, then the tier 6 branch growth has been very significant in the last 12, 15 months. So incrementally, these, tier 6 branches have been contributing 60-70% of the new growth, fresh growth. How should we read this?
So the branch split that is happening, so, we were anyway strong between tier 4, tier 5, and tier 6 earlier also. Now, when the branch split is happening, so more and more branches in Tier 5 and Tier 6 are getting split because these are good pockets for us where the branches have grown to a reasonable size. So earlier, if you had one branch, now we are having two branches in Tier 6. I think that's what explains the contribution of Tier 5, Tier 6 towards this AUM proportion. But I think if you look at it overall from an AUM perspective, yeah, leave a number of branches. We were anyway strongly biased towards 4, 5 and 6 tiers.
Hmm. And when you speak about branch tiering, it is by location, right? It is not by branch size.
It is by location. It is by the actual
population.
Yeah, population where the branch is located.
Understood. Thank you so much for answering my questions and best of luck.
Yeah, thank you, Rajiv.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Shubhranshu Mishra from Philip Capital. Please go ahead.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for the opportunity. Two questions. The first one is around the disbursements. Given the fact that we have this churn of almost 20 to 25%, which was discussed earlier on the call, what percentage of our disbursement is to existing customers each year? What percentage is to new customers? That's the first. Second is around the leverage of the customers, whether they're existing or new. How often do we check on the leverage? How many other trade lines do these customers have? I do understand that a lot of them are new to credit, but do they have any other informal credit or any other unsecured credit? There's been a lot of proliferation of fintechs who are doing a lot of unsecured lending, and of course that's also come down, but then have we done these checks more recently, and what are our observations? Thanks.
So Shubhranshu, like we said, most of the disbursals happen to the newer customers only. So maybe about 8 to 10% of the disbursals will be happening to our existing customers, either through top-ups or additional loans or fresh facilities after they close their old loans. So about 90% of our disbursals happen to newer customers from the branch side. In terms of the leverage check that we do, we definitely do it at the time of underwriting, where we ensure that we try and get all the formal data through the credit bureau reports, whatever possible informal data through neighborhood and trade checks. But beyond that, we don't have a process of checking this data on a periodic basis, because even if we check it, it's more an academic data that we will have. I think Mr. Pati just answered the last question, where he said even if the customer is taking a loan, the day after he has taken a loan from us, what is it that they can do? It should be up to the other lender to ensure that they are very clear that this guy has already leveraged himself at 5-star. Now, for us to take the data and do the scrub, like I said, it's an academic exercise and we could get into, but we don't have any periodicity at which we keep taking this data and try and see what is the leverage of our customers. We ensure that by taking a property, by making all the family members as applicants and co-applicants of the loan, the customer will give priority to us even in the most difficult time. So that is something that we do rather than, you know, doing a scrub data and I don't know what we can do beyond that.
For sure. If I can speak just one last question, the quantum of disbursement FY24 is almost as much as the disbursement that we did in the previous 2 years. Do we expect some degree of seasoning impact and then impacting the credit cost going forward because of the seasoning impact of this? Because it's a much bigger number. It's almost as big as the FY22 and 23 numbers.
See, this is again a problem because of FY22 number having been impacted by COVID. So FY21 and 22 are years that probably need to be kept out of our comparisons. But if you look at prior to FY20, when we have been growing much faster, or post FY22, where we have been showing a good proportion of growth, we don't really see, you know, any kind of a seasoning impact to come in. Obviously, there will be some impact. But we are also going to keep adding new customers, new loans. So it will sort of balance each other. So we don't really see any impact on the credit cost coming in because of fresh disbursements becoming muted and the seasoning impact coming through. So it will largely offset each other.
So thanks. Those are my questions.
Thank you.
Thank you.
The next question is from the line of Sonal from Prescient Capital. Please go ahead.
Hi, sir. This is Sonal Minas. Am I audible?
Yeah. Please go ahead.
Sir, I wanted to understand the maturity profile of any particular loan vis-a-vis the time that the loan has been on your books, because you mentioned that typically it's a seven-year-old loan. That's the duration of the loan. So how do you see the NPA panning out in 1 year, 2 year, 3 year, 4 year? As in, if you could just give a bit of a color around that, that would be great.
So on a static pool, our analysis shows, especially the later portfolios, the last 3-4 years when we have implemented D1, C1 completely, there is a drop in the probability of default, which means the number of customers who are turning NPAs itself has reduced. So on this, typically what we see, there is some level of peaking that happens around the 3-3.5 years timeline. This used to be about 2.5-3 years earlier, but that has got pushed because of the collection efforts. So 3-3.5 years, there is a peaking that happens, which probably, you know, goes to about 2-2.5% on a static pool basis, sort of stabilizes. But it's also important that from an LGD, we don't lose any of this, because in most of these cases, while the customer might have slipped into NPA, might stay in an NPA, there is empirical evidence to prove that when he settles the loan, he actually clears all the dues. So our LGDs are very low from that perspective. But just to answer your question, yeah, around 3-3.5 years, there is a little bit of peaking, around 2-2.5% of static pool NPA stabilizes, and then we are able to recover almost 99% of the principal that would have stayed as principal at the time of NPA.
Got it, sir. Thanks for this. Second question, which is, I think, linked to write-offs, which is you're talking about. If you just take maybe last 10 years or maybe last 5 years and take a snapshot, like, do you share data of how much write-offs have you done? What percentage of books? Because percentage numbers are a little misleading. But as you mentioned, that is it okay to say that 1% of all the books who are maturing, mature over 3-5 years, typically that's the write-off on the book? How do you understand that?
No, 1% is a very high number. Generally, our experience has shown that our write-off tends to be somewhere around 25 to 30 basis points of our opening book. If you look at the last 5 years, we would probably have written off somewhere close to 60 to 70 crores of loans. So that's the overall number. But broadly, on a year-on-year basis, the technical write-off works to about 25 to 30 basis points.
Got it. And the actual write-offs will be lower than the technical write-offs.
Actual losses will be lower.
Yes. Yeah, Srikanth said this is fully a secured loan. It's only a time gap that it takes for Five Star to recover the write-off from the legal course. So the credit loss, which is the ultimate loss that we suffer, maybe around 15 to 20 bps.
Understand. And the last question from my side, you were talking about giving top-up loans or follow-up loans, whatever they may call it, adds up to 8 to 10% of the books. As a prudence measure, these top-up loans are typically given to customers once they finish a particular life cycle of a loan, or they are given while the current loan is also outstanding. Just trying to understand the process.
Yeah, so top-up loan is not an automatic program within Five Star. The customer has to apply for a top-up loan, and he can apply for a top-up loan after minimum of 2 years of seasoning with Five Star. So when he applies for a loan, it's a fresh evaluation. Credit does the entire evaluation of the loan. They will check the repayment. They will check if there is any improvement or decrease in his loan in his overall income or in the valuation of the property. And then finally take a call on what is the loan amount that needs to be given. When the loan is given, when the top-up loan is given, the customer has to be a zero DPD customer. So if the customer's track record is patchy for whatever reason, he does not get sanctioned a loan with Five Star. When we give a loan, we will make sure that both the loans run parallelly in the system. Because if you with the proceeds of the new loan, if you have to close the old loan, the history of the old loan goes away. So we don't do that. We allow both the loans to run parallelly, which means loan one runs to its original tenure. Maybe let's say he took a loan for 7 years. He applies for a loan at the end of 3 years in this example. The original loan will run for another 4 years while the new loan gets sanctioned at this point of time, which will run for 7 years from this period to the next 7 years. Any deterioration in any of these two loans will result in an automatic degradation on the asset quality of the loan. So it's not about, you know, old loan being extinguished or the new loans being given separately. Both those loans will play to determine what is the asset quality, you know, for the particular customer.
Understand that, sir. That's it from my side. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. The next question is from the line of Vijay from Sher Khan. Please go ahead.
Hello. Hello.
Yes.
Yeah, go ahead. Hi. Good morning, sir, and congratulations on good set of number. My question is about borrowing mix. As you mentioned that you are moving towards capital market. So what kind of the percentage you would see in terms of, you know, banks versus capital market? And if you move toward capital market, what kind of the benefits the company will get?
So Vijay, I think in a steady state, this is not immediately, but maybe over the next 2 to 3 years, we are probably looking at banks to be at about 50% and balance coming in from capital market, securitization, DFIs and all that. See, from a benefit perspective, like I said, you know, we can do 100% from banks today. There are enough and more banks willing to lend to us. But it's a question of diversification. What are the sources that are available for you? Certain sources can be on tap. Certain sources can be a little more, like if a bank takes an exposure today, they'll wait for 12 months to take a fresh exposure, while that may not be the case with capital markets. So it is a question of, you know, maintaining the balance between availability of funds and cost of funds. So in a steady state, we expect it to be 50-50. Banks will always be relatively cheaper as compared to capital market transactions. So we'll play the rate with the banks, but capital markets can give you good quantums and can be, you know, can be faster in processing, you know, renewals. So all of those things will be taken care of when we look at the borrowing mix.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. The next question is on the line of Arvind from Sundaram Alternates. Please go ahead.
Yeah. Hello team, thank you so much for the opportunity. I think like this question has been answered, but I would like to get a bit more color on this, especially on the terms of asset quality. Obviously, the MFI players have, you know, signed off, you know, some pockets of stress or risk, you know, coming up in different regions of the country. And obviously, like our customer behavior, repayment behavior is much better in terms of income as well as the repayment behavior because it's a mortgage loans. But are you seeing any pockets of risk either in terms of regions or any or in terms of any economic activities, sir?
Arvind, what you read from the voice of MFIs, we also read that, and it is true. I am not denying it. I never denied it. I only said during this pocket of stress, how does the customer differentiate himself from a secured loan to an unsecured loan? That's what my commentary was. And this is again proven in this quarter when unsecured guys were facing the pressure. Secured loans guys like HFCs and mortgage lenders like Five-Star, we didn't see any pressure, big pressure at all. And we'll be bouncing back in the month of, in the quarter of September. Whereas the unsecured lender will take a little bit more time to bounce back. So there was a heat in elections, heat in weather, and as I said, seasonal expense of school fees in the month of June, all put together would have affected the minds of the customer. Generally, if a customer minds get affected, they show it in the unsecured loan. That's my 20 years experience. So they will not show it in the secured loans. So that does, having said that, I never denied that our customers have not seen any slowdown in the cash flows. They have seen the cash flow slowdown, no doubt about that, because of the two factors what I said. But they will bounce back in the quarter of September and going forward. So we'll be very comfortable going forward.
Hello.
We'll move to the next question.
Sure. The next question is from the line of Dinesh from Finsight. Please go ahead.
Hello, sir. Can you hear me?
Yeah, please go ahead.
Yeah. First of all, congratulations on a very good set of numbers. I joined a few minutes late. Maybe you have answered this previously, but just for my, you know, I just wanted to know, like, how your employee addition program has been in this quarter, because I just see the number has been pretty flat quarter-on-quarter. So how do we see for this year and, you know, going forward? That's my first question. Yep.
Dinesh, yes, you are right. The number of branches have gone up. The number of offices are almost flat. And this is what the commentary, what we have been saying in last two quarters, that the split branch, the cluster branch approach is work underway. So that's where you see number of branches more, but no big operational cost or offices getting added here. And just to recollect you, Dinesh, whether you've been tracking Five-Star for last four, six quarters, I don't know. We used to have a full-fledged collection vertical during the months of COVID. That helped Five-Star to have a good asset quality. And slowly and steadily, we are moving the good numbers of collection team to convert into business. So that is also operate being done side by side. So both put together, as per our commentary, as per our guidance, what growth that we intend to do in this quarter, accordingly, the addition of officers is being done.
Okay, that sounds good. But can we expect at least, you know, the previous trend which we have seen in the past, would that continue henceforth? Maybe, you know, once you add more number of branches or you split branches, obviously we'd need some extra manpower there, right, to get more loans and disbursements?
Yes. So two things will come into play, Dinesh. One is when a collection officer gets into business, more number of files gets logged in and more disbursement will happen. That will be done. I'm saying it will be in slow and steady. We are not in a hurry to convert everyone. We are converting wherever we see good traction in collections, so that collection people moves into business. That's point number one. Point number two, as I said in earlier question, 70-90 new branches will be formed in new locations, mostly in South and good numbers in rest of the country. Those number of officers will be a clear addition to Five-Star in this financial year.
Okay, sounds great. But will that lead to any increase in operating expenses, or we would expect the OpEx as a percentage of AUM to remain fairly flat going forward?
Our cost to income, which is a clear metric of measuring what is the cost that you incur for the income what you get, is at 34 point something in this quarter. We will remain at 35%. That's the guidance what we have been given to the market, and there will not be any increase or decrease in this number.
Okay, that sounds great. Thank you and all the best.
Thank you.
Thank you.
The next question is from the line of Kunal Shah from Citigroup. Please go ahead.
Yeah. Hi. So, sorry, joined in late, so not sure if that got answered. But if you look at the AUM vintage, maybe that's now getting more skewed towards the lower bucket in terms of 1-3 years. So is it more in terms of incrementally we have changed the tenor, or this is more in terms of the repayments which are happening and what proportion is left on the AUM that is showing that kind of a vintage, because the disbursal growth run rate is also relatively low? Yeah.
So, Kunal, I think the answer is in the last statement that you made. It is primarily because of the incremental disbursements that we are doing. There is a little bit of the runoff impact which is there. Like we said, while we onboard the loans for 6 to 7 years tenure at the time of origination, the typical behavioral tenure works out about 4-4.5 years. So, you know, a loan which typically would have been given, let us say, in 2019 or so, should have ideally been repaid by now at a portfolio level. There will be loans, obviously, but at a portfolio level, it will not be a very significant percentage. And with the newer loans, especially the last couple of years, the growth has also been good. So with the newer loans getting added, you will probably see the proportion of newer vintage loans being higher. But having said that, I did answer
question earlier in terms of our experience from a static pool perspective, where we are seeing very good traction on the newer vintage loans given our focus on D1, C1, the collection efficiency. So it is not like, you know, you are probably going to see NPAs or losses that you probably saw, let us say, on a portfolio which was 4 years back. The newer vintages are coming with much lower probability of default, much lower loss given default. So even the newer pools, the static pools on the newer vintages will not cross 2-2.5% of NPAs in a steady, in a peak scenario, which we are expecting it to be around 3-3.5 years.
Yeah, but in terms of contracted tenor, that's something which we have not tweaked, that still continues.
We have not tweaked level, no. It's okay. Still at a max of 7.
Yeah, okay. And looking at that in terms of the borrowing, so maybe given the ALM and there is a clear maybe 10 percentage point decline in that tenor, so are we realigning the borrowing profile towards the lower tenor bucket? And just maybe as you explained, there was some benefit which has come through in terms of the borrowing cost, which you will tend to pass it on in terms of the lending rate. But maybe shifting this skew on the borrowing towards the lower tenor, would it further help in terms of the overall cost?
Kunal, while it may help on the overall cost, I think we are very clear that we want to be at a match ALM. We don't want to carry, you know, much of a mismatch. So given that our behavioral tenors are around 4-4.5 years, even our borrowings are more like, you know, 4 to 5 years on an average, while there are a few entities which give 7 years and all that, but generally we are at about 4-4.5 years. And we are not looking at, you know, going too much down, you know, to the shorter tenor. So we will ensure that we borrow similar tenures. So we are not looking at too much of, you know, cost benefit to come in because of borrowing for lower tenors and, you know, allowing any kind of a mismatch on the ALM to be there. So we will continue to borrow at around 4-5 years average tenor, which is the behavioral tenor of the assets as well.
Sure. And lastly, you indicated that maybe running the civil checks again would be more of a academical exercise. But given what is being heard in terms of customer over leveraging, would we take some initiative this time because it's been heard across the industry, or would we still wait for in terms of R1 to 30, 31 to 60 delinquency just to ensure that, okay, whether it's reflecting in there and then take the action? Because I think there is the stress which is building up. So would we think maybe at least in terms of having some maybe guardrails out there?
So Kunal, we can do this exercise, but I don't know practically can we, with the information that let's say an ex-borrower has taken more monies, will you have the ability to go and control the borrower? That's the question. You may have the knowledge, but I think if you are confronting the borrower with this information, the borrower will say, yeah, you know, I have taken this loan, but as long as I repay your loan, what's your problem? You know, I think if such a question is directly asked, there is no answer. So we do keep monitoring this at, you know, our pockets where we are expecting some stress to happen, but in 100% of the top-up cases, or let's say in cases where at a regional level we are potentially seeing some stress, we can definitely do this and, you know, make some policy level changes if need be.
Okay. Yeah, that would be good. Yeah. Okay. Thanks and all the best. Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you.
The next question is from the line of Pranav Gupta from Alpha Investment Advisors. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Good morning and congratulations on a good set of numbers. Just a couple of questions. Firstly, talking about branch expansion, you mentioned that, you know, almost half your rate for this year would sort of come to 60. Is it going to be 20% or it's probably because we've seen...
I'm sorry to interrupt, sir, but Mr. Gupta, your voice is not clear.
Just a second. Is it better now?
A little. I hope you're using a handset.
Yeah, that's what I'm using.
All right. Please go ahead.
I'll just repeat my question. What I was trying to understand is this branch expansion strategy that we have for this year, almost 50% of which will come from splitting of large branches. Is this something that, is this trend sort of going to continue for the next 3-4 years, or is this something that we just see in the near term
post which we will start opening newer branches rather than splitting a larger part of our branches? That's the first question.
Yeah, Pranav, I think it all depends upon the number of super branches and bigger branches what we have in Five Star. It's close to 200 to 225 branches, if I'm not right. Those are the branches that we are intend to make it an ideal branch. Ideal is a very clear terminology where we find that ideal branch will run through for next 3 years without any risk into it. It's not the entire 500 branches will move towards split. It's only the bigger branches. I think it will be completed in a 12-month period. So we have already started it. Maybe in the next 9 to 12-month period, this exercise will be perfectly done. So that's the commentary that I can give now. In case maybe 6 months later, I can revisit what has happened in that.
Understood. So the second question is on Tamil Nadu. So you mentioned that Tamil Nadu was not able to catch up in terms of growth over the last year, but you're confident that this year it will sort of catch up. But if you look at last year, are there any specific issues that we saw for the state? Maybe attrition, that is something that a couple of other players in that geography mentioned, or maybe some over-leveraging of customers in certain pockets. Is there something that we can point towards for last year, or could you help us understand that better?
Pranav, nothing new. That's what I have seen, because I said I met each and every member of Tamil Nadu team last month and previous month too. So it's a general phenomena that Tamil Nadu is one of the best performing states for any lenders. So you see every banks and NBFCs having their presence in Tamil Nadu. So it is nothing new that has happened anything in Tamil Nadu. Andhra and Telangana, maybe we are very, very good in Andhra and Telangana. So those two states are catching up rightly good. So Tamil Nadu was not able to match that speed. That's what I meant. There was no lesser speed in Tamil Nadu. If you compare Tamil Nadu with Tamil Nadu on a yearly basis, there's nothing lesser in what they have been doing. While comparing with other two states, their catch-up was slower is what I mentioned. And that difference of catch-up will be narrowed in this year. That's, I'm very confident from Tamil Nadu's perspective.
Understood. And so just one clarification. You mentioned that for the digital push or payments through digital methods, we sort of mandated a UPI auto pay. In case a customer's EMI bounces because of lack of balance or any other reason on the UPI payment mandate, do we charge any fees or is that something that we don't do at all?
So we do. We do charge a bounce charge for any UPI or a NACH mandate which gets bounced.
And the charges will be same?
It's the same. It is the same. We charge 500 rupees per bounce, and it is the same for any mandate which gets bounced.
Right. Sure. Thank you so much, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Sanjay Chawla from Renaissance Investment Managers. Please go ahead.
Good morning. Thank you for the opportunity. I've got a couple of questions. Can you indicate what is the target leverage ratio? Currently, it is rather low at 2.3 times. And the second question, which is related question, is what combination of dividend policy, ROE, and AUM growth you expect that would take you to your target leverage and by when?
I've been said several times. Let me repeat it. At a steady state means 2-3 years down the line, we intend to be somewhere close to 3.75 to 4 times the leverage. I'm talking about leverage from perspective, not debt to equity. Debt to equity means it will be 2.75 to 3 debt to equity and leverage of 3.75 to 4. That's where ideally 5 Star wants to fit into it. So that will take another 2.5 to 3.5 years from now to reach that stance. While doing so, our spreads will be close to 12 to 13%, and NIMs will be close to 14, 14.5 or 15%. and that eventually translates to ROA of close to 7% and ROE, which will go beyond 20%. That's where we guide the market in the steady state, and we are very clearly right on the trajectory what we have been talking to the market, and we are very confident of reaching it ahead of time itself. But let me not take it up in this point of time. It will be next 2.5 to 3.5 years where we will reach this leverage, ROA and ROE. From a dividend perspective, I think I also gave a last answer to one gentleman who asked me in last earning call. You will hear a good news very soon. Let me repeat the same to all the individual shareholders. You will hear a very good news very soon.
So, you know, you obviously indicating a 20% plus ROE business and, you know, getting to that leverage in 3-4 years, let's say. My question is, what kind of an AUM growth? You're probably looking at 25% CAGR. Am I correct on that?
So we are looking at 30% CAGR growth for next 2 to 3 years.
Right, so that can lead you, you will have to pay a substantial dividend to actually get to that leverage ratio in 3-4 years. I mean, maybe 40-50% payout on your profit. Is that something which, combination you're looking at to get to your target leverage?
Right now, we are not looking dividend payout from a leverage perspective. See, it's a board's call, that board will take a right call. If the leverage is little lower also, but nothing to worry, our ROE guidance, what I have said, that 20% plus, we will reach very comfortably.
Okay. Thank you. All the best.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Hemant Patel, Aldo Capital. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hello, sir. Just noticed that when I look at it from an AUM to branch tier, your proportion of semi-urban allocation, which is tier 5 and tier 6, I mean, has increased from 58% 2 years back to around 70%. Seems like there is an inclination towards a lot more on the semi-urban side. I just wanted to understand what's driving this inclination. Second, when I look at it from an RBI classification of rural, which is 10,000 below POP, right? Just wanted to understand what proportion of this tier 6 caters to that segment of that market. Is there a white space? Is there something that you would look at going ahead as you expand your book?
Yeah, Hemant, the tiers what we have indicated is our own classification. Tier 3, we call it as 20 lakh plus population, and tier 7 we call as 25,000 plus population. That's our internal metric, nothing to refer to the commonality what other lenders do. Maybe we will align going forward with what terminology that other people refer to. Even the tier 7 where we are now starting our presence, it has a 25,000 plus population in that region. So we are not looking into a 10,000 population at all. We don't want to get into that kind of rural market as of now, because there are plenty and plenty of available spaces for us to move the customers from informal to formal. So tier 5, tier 6, tier 7, these three will be the driving force for 5-star, at least for next 24 months is what I think.
Just one more question. Tier 7, what proportion that would be of the overall AU?
So tier 7, we have just started, I said. Even that is around 20,000 plus population. So a predominant our presence will be at tier 5 and tier 6. Tier 7 is just started.
So okay. Tier 3 to tier 6 will be the major portion. 95 plus percentage of our book will be from tier 3 to tier 6.
Yeah, but I just was pointing this question towards the inclination to move more towards it. I mean, is it because you feel that the competitive intensity is more, if I were to put it in urban areas versus the semi-urban areas where you are actually heading towards a lot more in terms of granular presence?
Yes, slowly the penetration will be happening in tier 1, tier 2, tier 3 cities. So if you see tier 3 cities also, we are not very fond of. So once you not fond of tier 3 cities, the alternative what we are seeing, where the files are coming from, where the customers are coming from, is clearly towards tier 5, tier 6. So that's where we will be moving towards. And we want to keep ourselves closer to the customer. There is no need of keeping our branch in tier 3 and sourcing a file from a smaller location in tier 5 and tier 6. Better we keep our branch in tier 5, tier 6 location and call those branches as tier 5, tier 6 locations. So that's the thought process that we have currently in process.
All right, sir. Thank you. Wish you all the best.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Dinesh from FinSight. Please go ahead.
Hello, sir. Thanks for giving me another opportunity. My question is a very simple bookkeeping question. What's the total number of diluted shares outstanding we have right now as of Q1? And what's the ESOP plan we have for the next few quarters and years?
Dinesh, can you repeat the first one?
The total number of diluted shares outstanding as of
So diluted shares is about 29.5 crores.
Okay. And what's the ESOP plan for the next few quarters? Like, do we have any major, SBCs?
So we had approved a ESOP plan about a few months back, Dinesh. So that will be given. So right now, we have enough, both in the older plans and the newer one that got approved a few months back. So we will use that to incentivize our people. If there is a need at a later point of time, we will, the board will deliberate and then we'll come to the shareholders. But nothing on the anvil right now.
Right. And nothing more share dilution, right? Apart from this, what we have already planned for, right? Is that
nothing on the anvil right now. What the number is 29.5 crores is taking into account all the dilutions. So nothing on the ESOPs right now.
Okay, and my last question is on this Maharashtra. Like, I have, we don't see, Maharashtra being such a big capital intensive and, growing economy, almost on the verge of being 1 trillion now in the next few years. Why are we not expanding, so aggressively in Maharashtra?
So Maharashtra, you will see us expanding very clearly this year. We were taking a little bit of a pause in Maharashtra because of COVID issues. But I think the last 2 years, Maharashtra has performed very well for us. This year is an expansion year for Maharashtra. You will already see us putting a good number of branches. Definitely, I think from this year onwards, Maharashtra will become a key market for us.
Yeah, and your loan on average loan, what we give book value, that will remain same in Maharashtra, right? Or will you go on a more conservative basis, okay, and start with a lower value and then increase it? How do you thinking about it?
No. So far, I think across all the states, we don't have a differentiated strategy from a product perspective. At origination, the LTVs across all the states will range anywhere between 40 to 50%, depending on the merits of the case. So MH is no different from that perspective.
Okay, that sounds good. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Ladies and gentlemen, due to time constraint, that was the last question. I now hand over the conference to Mr. Sameer Bise for closing comments.
Thank you very much, everyone, for joining this call today. Thank you to the management of Five Star Business Finance for giving us the opportunity. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you, Sameer, for taking us through. And I'm thanking you, all the shareholders, for the wonderful questions. If any question outside, please feel free to connect us directly so we can give you the clarity. With this, we will end up this Q1 earnings call. Thank you.
On behalf of JM Financial, that concludes this conference. Thank you for joining us, and you may now disconnect your lines.